The following podcast is a work of fiction. All characters are the creation of Peter Williams. Any resemblance to someone living or dead is purely coincidental. Thank you.
391 days. Count them if you like. 391 since our last Tentacle Tuesday. Hello again. Need I remind you I am your host, Lord Piotra. And this is one of the many stories that surround our friend Detective Warren Stevens. And yes, if you are wondering, he is still floating around out there. Meanwhile, Jonah has spent the last 3 years focused on finding his own apprentice, the girl of his dreams, so to speak. Although, not quite. Today we join him on his quest as we finally get to introduce officially the girl on the flowered swing, the girl from the steps of heaven, the girl who has been waiting for a very long time, Arista. Before I begin, I wish to remind you that this podcast may contain images of graphic violence, haunting imagery, and of course, child endangerment. Some salty language, and yes, a tentacle or two. Now, grab your tentacles. Boy, doesn't that sound nice? I haven't said that in so long. Grab your tentacles, your popcorn. Dim the lights as we begin again, joining our friend, Jonah Hollander, somewhere in the deep woods, in the dark of the night, with Chapter 1, Dreams and Fire.
Dreams. It always seems to start with dreams. Dreams of torment. Dreams of lost loves. Dreams of possibilities. And now this. Dreams of fire. What was the cause? The embers of the campfire were barely enough to cast a glow on the dirt that surrounded it. He rolled over and stretched. It was unlikely he'd get any more sleep tonight. Judging by the sky, it was at best 4 a.m. Pushing the sleeping bag off and rolling it up before adding a log to the campfire. Here, he could always picture Calcifer and hear the voice of Billy Crystal making the nom 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 sounds as it began to catch glow, illuminating the world around him. 3 years had passed since Warren went through the gate to rescue Alex Kuchma, and it'd be still a few more before he returned to the cottage. Meanwhile, he was still adjusting to life without Mr. Alistair. Terrence, meanwhile, still working at the seminary in New Hope, had sent a message that he had found someone there he would find interesting and that he should come to visit as soon as possible. Caitlin Maxwell had taken up living again at the Cafe Solfeggio. Apparently, both of her grandchildren showed exceptional skills. Sam, of course, was still out there, sometimes as part of the sword, sometimes as a guide. It depended on where in time she was, before or after the death of Jack Stevens. Sam's was a lonely path, but at the same time, Jack had imparted part of himself to remain with her in the sword. And of course, Maggie. Hers was the loneliest path of all. After Macau had found her, Macau sent her to spend a few years with his parents, and although Jonah told her this was fine, Maggie, because of her nature, was concerned that evil things would be drawn to them. So with no family, and only a few friends, and like him, those dwindled over the years. She mostly resided at the tower, working as a messenger for Terrence, waiting and watching, still convinced that Cassandra would return. Some branches cracked to his left, alerting him to someone approaching through the thicket. His left hand did not pulse or ache, so whoever it was had no ill will towards him. Focusing his eyes to see through the shadows, he wasn't sure if he should be happy or annoyed. "Hello, Macau," Jonah called out. At that, Macau revealed his true splendor, making the fire nearly useless. His white wings flapped a few times before neatly folding behind his back. "While I do love these things," Macau quipped, "they can be a little obtrusive in the woods." "So I could hear," Jonah replied. "If your approach had been any louder, you might have awakened the trees." Macau raised an eyebrow, pretending to be annoyed before sitting on an opposite tree trunk near the fire. "This is nice. Any marshmallows?" Ha ha ha, Macau. No. I try to keep it simple. For shame, Jonah. Marshmallows off of a campfire are a wonderful thing. These splendid gifts you humans have created. Jonah grabs his backpack and pauses. He looks it over. Once red and black, it's now faded and torn in several places. A few green and black patches line the sides and bottom, places Caitlin had sewn it for him. Unzipping it, he pulls out a banged-up coffee brewer and French press. I do have the essentials, Jonah said, holding them up to the already beaming Macau. Oh, coffee. Yes, the father knew what he was doing when he made that, Macau replied. Jonah laughed. What did we always argue? Jonah asked. The five greatest creations? Macau responded. I believe you always said that coffee, bacon, chocolate, bourbon, and women were the best. Yes, Jonah nodded. But you always argued for wine and dogs, Jonah laughed. Macau smiled. Well, what did the word use at the Last Supper? Wine. Yes, I understood your point, but dogs? Loyal to a fault and cute as, well, you know. Ah, but it was a woman who said yes, Macau. I wasn't putting dogs over women, Macau stated. Men, however. Jonah laughed. It had been a while since he had laughed. Jonah, Macau began. What do you know of the girl you're seeking? Jonah leaned back against the log. Honestly, not much, he replied. Why? There's a story about her, Macau stated. That she exists outside of time and will only manifest towards the end. Then, my chapter? My story? Might be the last, Macau acknowledged. Does she know this? Jonah wondered. Yes, he replied. She's been waiting for the right person, the right time. But me? Jonah stated a little surprised. Yes and no. It was actually a combination of two factors started off by your forebearer, Jack. Jonah was feeling frustrated by the conversation. Macau, I can't keep playing games like this. I can't keep waiting for some special warrior to manifest. I... Macau raised an eyebrow a second time. You don't have to, he replied. What do you mean? But Macau was gone and the forest was empty. Jonah, out of frustration, screamed into the heavens. This is why no one likes it when you just show up. At least Gabriel had some tact. He poured himself some coffee, only to realize he was still dreaming. Rain splattered his face, rousing him out of his sleep. Sitting up fast, he tried to secure the tent, but the torrent was too strong and pulled it back. Thunder boomed overhead, bringing back memories. He grabbed his chest and the old wound, as once again his thoughts turned to Maggie, her house, and the thing that had once been her father. With that, lightning splattered the surroundings, giving everything a twisted shape as he rushed to pack up his encampment. Thunder clapped again, a flash illuminating his surroundings, and for a brief moment his heart leapt. He could swear he saw Mr. Alistair's shadow. The old wound began to ache even more, making him think this is no ordinary storm. He was being made to move, but to what purpose? Okay, he called out to the darkness. I get it! I get it! But the wind only picked up. The ache in his chest spread and ran down his arm, a splash of blue light tugging at the bandages that wrapped it. A demon was nearby, a big one. Leaving his stuff, he began to follow the vibration. Like a scent, his hand drew him towards the monster. Usually it worked in reverse. Usually they sought him out. He acted like a Venus flytrap, a sweet-smelling soul to be consumed and possessed. But this time, where are you taking me? He muttered. He was soaked from head to toe. Then he knew it. He smelt it. Fire. Someplace nearby was burning. He began to rush towards it. A house stood in golden flames, a large cabin with long glass window panels gleaming in the blaze. From the second story, he could see a soft blue light spilling out into the night and the rain. He looked at it and wondered, could he still get in and... The fire was climbing. The fire was climbing. This house wasn't on fire. The fire itself was the demon. The thing roared as it pounded itself against the blue light, trying to penetrate it as if it was an invisible shield. Then the blue light surged, forcing the demon back, only to have it look back up at the broken window with rage as it roared a second time. Then, Jonas sensed it. Whoever was upstairs was spent. If he didn't act, and act now. Unbandaging his left arm, blue lightning began to course through the air and lick the area where the demon stood. It immediately had turned its attention to Jonah. It struck at him as it arced itself into the sky, landing on top of where he was just standing. This caught Jonah by surprise. This thing moved fast. It acted like a living flamethrower. "Boy, I could use Sam right now," he muttered, as the rain continued its deluge, having no effect on the fiery beast. Rolling back and out of the flames, he looked up at the walking torrent. Lightning would definitely not work here. He could consume it, but at what personal cost? Behind it, in the broken window, a face appeared. She was young. Her skin was pale and her eyes blazed like blue fire, and her hair, silver. Is that? Had the dream of Mikhail been prophetic? The fire demon, sensing his prey, turned again from Jonah. It would not be denied. But the girl didn't look at it with fear. Jumping down 25 feet from the window onto the soggy ground, she looked more like a fierce warrior than a little girl. He could almost hear the demon's smile as it let out a deep-throated chuckle.
"My morsel has come to me. How sweet."
Jonah couldn't wait any longer. His left arm thrust forth into the night. With a grimace, he could hear his palm split open and blood splatter. A howling sound kicked up as a whirlwind began to reach out towards the monster. But it stood there, smiling. A new figure emerged from the darkness. Tall, muscular, and carrying some sort of weapon on its back. It had a human physique, but it definitely was not human. Drawing what appeared to be a long spear off its back, it swung around and placed himself between him and the demon. "Go, Morak," the man said. "I will handle this one for you."
"Yes, master."
The fire demon turned and faced the little girl. "Master," Jonah thought. "Who could he be?" He watched the demon move away. "Don't take your eyes off me," the man with the spear said. With that, Jonah took a defensive posture. "No sword, I see," the man continued. "My timing couldn't be more perfect." "Who are you?" Jonah asked, as he continued to size up the man. "You don't remember me," he laughed. "I'm hurt." He aimed the spear at Jonah, and black lightning shot out. Jonah managed to avoid it, and the thing spoke again. "Just a nameless victim, left dangling, unnoticed by both you and that detective. Speaking of, where is the dusty old man?" Another clue. This was someone that both he and Warren had met. But where? When? An explosion of blue lightning interrupted the conversation. Both he and Jonah turned and looked back in the direction the demon had headed. But instead of a hulking mass of fire, just the girl stood there, every part of her glowing in blue light. The man frowned and turned his spear towards her, but too late. An arc of blue came crackling towards him. Barely able to fend off the energy, the man looked over his shoulder. "Two against one. No, I don't think so. I don't like these odds. See ya, Jonah." He winked and vanished with the spear into the shadows. The girl looked briefly at Jonah before collapsing to a heap on the wet ground. Jonah rushed over and pulled her into his arms. She briefly opened her eyes, smiled, and said, "I found you." The man moved away, satisfied as he entered a clearing overlooking the river.
"Did he recognize you?"
a voice asked. "No, not a chance," he replied.
"Then our assumption that his limited interaction with you wasn't enough for him."
"Yes."
"Good, good," he replied. "Her reaction, though, was a little surprising.
She has much more power than Jonah."
"True, but perhaps it's something we can turn to our benefit."
"Really?"
"Yes. If that is unchecked rage I saw, we might be able to twist her to our side."
"If we could do that,
yes, we could finally finish off the remnants of the Sacred Dawn and bring him to his knees."
The air grew silent, and the world still as the bony creature motioned with its burnt claw in hand. A black miasmic tunnel opened, and they stepped into it.
Make sure you follow them at a distance. We can't afford him too much of an opportunity to train her.
As you wish, Master.
Well, well, Arista does sound cute, doesn't she? Silver hair, gleaming blue eyes. If you ask me, the author watches way too much anime. But what can we do? I know, we can proceed to chapter 2, which, by the way, is, yes, named for our friend who unknowingly inspired its title. We go to chapter 2, Tentacle World Order.